sûr que le projet de l'AMI va s'adresser à ces catégories.
Je vous ai parlé de la bancarisation tout à l'heure, il nous reste vraiment une petite minute. Vous n'avez pas rebondi là-dessus, mais la bancarisation, c'est quand même un élément important également.
Tout à fait, tout à fait. Aujourd'hui, les taux se resserrent. Quand on voit les mesures qui ont été dictées, etc., pour les factures, il va y avoir un double phénomène. Mais finalement, il va y avoir l'expérience internationale, parce que finalement, on suit, on n'invente pas la poudre. Il va y avoir une obligation, une sorte...
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chautauqua, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, April 28th, 2022. An absolutely jam-packed show on the way. Writer Marc-André Thibault and director Ellen David team up to take his play, Mazel Tov, to new audiences.
Ellen, she came and saw the show and we said, okay, we should try to do an English version. So I'm really thrilled about it.
So I went to see the play and I was just sort of blown away. I mean, it was very dark, very funny, very tragic comic, and it just sort of pushed the envelope in so many ways.
Lisa Rubin at the Siegel Center also has a newly translated play, April Fools, a rock cabaret about a woman who dares to indulge in a fantasy.
But she questions, you know, can we find room or make room, or why do we not allow ourselves to talk about the fantasies that are buried, the secrets that are buried within us? And I think that's a very rare thing that we to present on stage. We don't talk about that a lot.
Jimmy Blay at Geordie Theatre on From the Stars in the Sky to the Fish in the Seas, teaching kids to accept themselves.
The way that we're trying to have people look at it through this story is that things are just a little bit more complex than the binary or polarity or duality. There's a lot of things that live in between those two poles, let's say, and outside of them as well.
And choreographer Ariane Boulet creates a work inspired by 8 years of dancing for residents in long-term care.
Like if every part of this society is in a way also a little part of myself. And when I started dancing in CHSLD, I was realizing how being and meeting and spending time in their relationship to time and space and relation would permit me to be differently than that I am normally with people of my age that are all in this way of being, working and everything, and that they would help me like discover life differently.
4 interviews, 5 guests. Let's get right into it. Mazel Tov, a common 2-word expression in Yiddish used to congratulate someone on their good fortune. You might use it, let's say, at a wedding, which is why playwright Marc-André Thibault borrowed the expression for the title of his show. But unfortunately for this bride and groom, an interfaith couple, freshly married, something weird and sort of violent went down at their nuptials, an outburst to tangle out over the course of a play. When director Ellen David saw the show in its original French, she proposed to Marc-André that they bring it to English audiences. And that is what they will do this weekend as Mazel Tov gets its English language premiere by Infinitheater at Kin Experience on St. Catherine. Ellen says it's a wonderful, immersive experience. I caught up with her as well as Marc-André earlier today. Bienvenue, Marc-André and Ellen, to Upstage. So nice to have you both here.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
Marc-André, this is so exciting. You're getting to see a show, your show, done in another language a couple of years after it was first kind of presented in a reading format, also directed by Ellen. Marc-André, can you tell me what this journey's been like for you?
It's a big premiere for me to have a big first to have this play in English now. So I began the writing like 8 or 9 years ago. I wrote the play. It took something like 4 years to write the play, and we produced it in 2017. And that's where I met Ellen. She came and saw the show, and we said, okay, we should try to do an English version. So I'm really thrilled about it. So the play talks about Jewish women that marries a non-Jewish man. And at the wedding, there is something happening. There's a bit of chaos at the wedding. And the groom gets heavily wounded, and they have to go to the hospital. So the play begins at that part. We're at the hospital just after the wedding, and we happen to learn that the best man, which is the best friend of the groom, did some anti-Semitic comments and actions that made furious the bride and her family. So that sets the play. It's really dark. It's really funny at the beginning. And
I feel like you have to make it, having an incident at a wedding where you end up in the ER, it has to be a dark comedy, right? There's no other way to spin that. I also love when we start a play when the bad thing has happened and we as the audience get to unravel that. Was that from the get-go how you were going to start the story? That's where you wanted to start?
Yeah, it's the first idea that came to my mind. Just how could it begin really bad, and how can I make it worse after that? So the play is it's getting really far in this drama, always with a funny touch, but I can't tell you too much, but it goes really far. I really like to put my characters in deep beep.
You're putting them through a lot.
Yeah.
And Ellen, the way Marc-André says it, this was an instant connection for you. Coup de coeur, you met him at the production that you had seen and said, let's get this in English. Was that that was an instant moment for you that you felt you had to?
No, not necessarily. I mean, it was, you know, winter, December of 2017. And I saw, you know, I like to try to see everything I can. And I saw this show called Mazel Tov at Prospero by Théâtre Bistouri. And I said, oh, what is this? And so I went to see the play and I was just sort of blown away. I mean, it was very dark, very funny, very tragic comic. And it just sort of pushed the envelope in so many ways. And there was a talk back after, which was really fascinating to me. So I went up and introduced myself to the writer and director, Marc-André Thibault. And we sort of struck up a friendship and, you know, talked about the possibility of presenting something like this in English. So he went ahead and did a translation and we worked together on it a little bit at some points to finesse some things. And then I brought it to Infinite Theater in their Pipeline series. And we sort of had, we had a reading at late 2019. And eventually the idea was to create a production, but of course with the pandemic, everything got delayed. And so here we are, you know, after many postponements and many waves, we are now in end of April, May of 2022, 5 years after, almost 5 years after I saw the show for the first time.
That is the voice of Ellen David, the director of Mazel Tov, and also speaking with Marc-André Thibault, who is the writer and the translator of this piece. Marc-André, it's a bit unusual to have the writer do the translation, because oftentimes you're translating into your native tongue. Here you're translating into English. Can you tell me about that process?
Yeah, it was quite a challenge. I have some experience in translating from English to French, but it was the first time that I tried to translate my work in English. So I needed some help at some point. So Ellen really helped me with this translation, just to make sure that everything holds up. We work really well together. Ellen really feels the play. We have good discussion about the writing, but also about directing the play. So we exchange a lot about the play. So I'm really pleased to have her on this show.
I am feeling vibes from you two that this is a collaborative like partnership here, which is so fascinating and such a beautiful thing to have unfold. Let's talk a bit about the content and the fact that we have an interfaith couple coming together. What spoke to both of you? Ellen, you're taking in the play, you want to direct it. Marc-André, this is your baby, you wrote it. But so you're coming from it from different perspectives. But what about the material speaks to each of you? Maybe Ellen, you go first.
as you say, Sarah, it's an interfaith couple getting married, and the groom, who is not Jewish, is honoring the bride's or the bride's family's customs. And at one point, he says almost that, you know, and because he's not Jewish, there's a priest present as well. So both faiths are represented in the ceremony. And he says, you know, having a priest and a rabbi at a wedding almost sounds like the beginning of a bad joke. And it is kind of slightly prophetic because it does unravel, not specifically because of the fact that they're interfaith initially, but something happens at the wedding that causes a series, a kind of avalanche of events to take place. And that's when chaos ensues and things are said or heard that really go beyond the pale in light of the faiths of the individuals and the circumstances. And so what the play is looking at to me is individuals that are in very extreme circumstances that react in a certain way and may say or do things that provoke other people's reactions. And that's kind of the times we're living in. What I find so fascinating is that in 2017, it was a certain story, a very powerful story. In 2022, we're almost more in the direction of something that needs to be discussed. We're in the age of rage. We're in the age of reaction. We're in an age where, you know, we're all aspiring to political correctness. And, you know, what's funny anymore? What can be said? What can we do? We see that, you know, what we do, our actions and our words have consequences, and sometimes it's dire consequences. And this is not a true story for me. It's a cautionary tale of what happens, almost a fable, when you go too far in a specific direction, and you know the worst possible circumstances arise. How do you come back from that? So it's, I'll pass it to Marc André in a moment. It's four flawed individuals who are on a scale of their own personal evolution, coming to grips with why they are the way they are, what are their tools to get by in life, what are their defense mechanisms, what are their particular senses of humor, and does it work now, and does it work with each other, and when do we have to put these things aside and respect the other individual? That's that, and so on. And I see what happens in the play is that each one of them goes through a dark night of the soul where we hopefully come out the other side, and even if it's not perfect, we're on a journey to become our better self.
Marc André, I think Ellen's trying to say that your play is aging like a fine wine, getting better over time.
That's good to hear.
What brought you to this theme of you know, interfaith relationship, but also, as Ellen was saying, reactions, pushing people's buttons?
One of the key theme of the play is to be able to put yourself in other people's shoes. Not just to see your own world, but to be able to see around it and other people's action, other people's reaction. So that's what the character learned in the play. And that's one of the things I hope the audience will appreciate and learn and think about it after the play. So, and this thematic to have a couple from different background, it just brings up that you have to be curious about the other just to make sure that everything is respectful and everything.
And what we find, what we find in the play is that it's not necessarily the couple themselves that have the issues, it's someone outside of their immediate family, someone who was so close with one of them and is now kind of using humor to try to diffuse situations, to become part of the group. And it doesn't always fall very well, literally.
But it's also a reminder that weddings are not just about the couple, it's about the community surrounding the couple, and so much tension or things that are not quite right get pushed to the fore at these kinds of events, which maybe explains why some people don't want to have weddings.
Sure.
And the other nice thing is that you're talking about two religions or two belief systems coming together. But here we also have a French play by a French playwright being produced by an Anglophone director for Anglophone audience. And obviously there will be Francophones in the audience and Allophones in the audience as well. So I see in your story that there is a nice message about collaboration here as well. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's only enriches the play, it enriches the human being we are, just to talk to other people, to think about the art, to think about these thematics. It's just better to be with with new people than to be always in your same circle. So it just enriches everything.
And I think it's a valid exploration of cultures coming together, religions coming together, seeing what the other side is, looking into the face of the other and seeing what their experience is, absorbing it and respecting it and honoring it and, you know, learning from this collaboration. So I think we see these people go through a variety of circumstances and we wonder, you know, what would we do? Do we find this funny? And if we do laugh, do we cringe when we're laughing? I mean, I laughed a lot when I saw it in French. I'm not sure if an Anglophone audience has the same sensibility as a Francophone audience. That's going to be interesting for us as well to explore. I have a pretty dark sense of humor, so I can sort of look past and try to understand what the playwright and what Marc-André was trying to explore by pushing people to the extreme and, you know, seeing what happens after that and where we come back from that and what we can learn from it.
It's been so nice to speak with both of you. Mazel tov on the arrival of this new production, Break a Leg. Thank you very much, Marc-André and Ellen.
Thank you
so much. Always a pleasure talking to you, Sarah.
That was writer and translator Marc-André Thibault and director Ellen David. Their show, Mazel Tov, opens tomorrow night, Friday, April 29th at Kin Experience, 397A St. Catherine Street West. Tickets are $25 to $30. You can call 514-987-1774, extension 104, or visit infinitheater.com for more information. I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, the new head of Geordie Theatre tells you about getting kids back in theaters for the first time in 2 years with a play about being yourself. Karen Pelles is an Israeli singing sensation. She wrote a musical inspired by a moment in her own life, when she took stock of all the wonderful things she had going on, but realized she was still left hungering for more. And so her character embarks on a dizzying love affair in April Fools. Karen created a dynamic, immersive rock musical, originally written and presented in Hebrew. And like with my last guests, the book and script have been adapted into English for the very first time for Montreal audiences. An ambitious production put on by the folks at the Siegel Center in collaboration with Karen and her original team. Lisa Rubin is executive and artistic director at the Siegel, and she is assistant director on this production. I spoke with Lisa yesterday. Welcome back to Upstage, Lisa. So glad to have you back.
I'm so glad to be back.
You're in full throttle getting ready for April Fools, an adult rock cabaret. Tell me about Karen Pelles and who she is in Israel.
Karen Pelles is, you know, the real deal when you think of the word pop star in Israel. So you think of how would people react if Taylor Swift walked out of a hotel room? Would people recognize her? Yes. That is how Karen is in Israel, not only as a writer and as a singer herself. Now she's a judge on Israel's Got Talent or The Voice, and she continues to push the boundaries of, you know, the kind of music she writes, the personal way she expresses things, the kind of very rap and her poetry through her music. She's renowned for that, and she writes for other stars as well. She's quite special, and she's, as a woman, she's fearless. And that is what I'm so inspired by. You know, the things that she just does not hold back, is not afraid to admit, is not afraid to be vulnerable, and is not afraid to share and put out there. It's quite something, even though I'm sure she has all the same things going on underneath, and she talks about that too. But yeah, she's quite something.
So do you just call up Israel's Got Talent and say, can you send Karen over here? or can we work on this with her? Like, how does that work?
I know, it's a beautiful, it's just the way the world works in theater. And when you meet people in theater, you know, it started all the way back with Oran Eldor, when the first time we met him was working on The Apprenticeship of Dudi Kravitz. And then fast forward, and we're doing his show Mythic.
And then he introduced me to Avichai Chacham, the incredible choreographer of Mythic, who said, you have to meet the incredible director, Moshe Kepton, who's the National Theater of Israel, Habima's director, because you need to work together. And this is where they have created all of their biggest shows in Israel. So of course I'm like, introduce me to Moshe Kepton. And then, you know, with Avi kind of sharing his experience here at the Siegel Center, we just were looking for a show to do together. And it, Moshe suggested, you know, this show, and why, and how different it is, and how it pushes the boundaries, and how it's, you know, gonna, you know, in Israel, how they, he did it at his theater, but it also brought in a younger audience. And it's just all the elements and challenges of this work. Of course I did it, because we're a bit nuts here taking on such challenges.
You do have to go big. And I'd say you are, in the sense that not only is this kind of like a Canadian premiere, but it's also an English language premiere. So there was a translation, there's a whole translation layer to this production.
Oh my God, of course. We had to take the original Hebrew and had to do a literal translation with an Israeli who lives in Montreal named Shelly Ben-Shachar. And then Akiva Romer Siegel, who is Canadian, and you, people may recognize his name because he was the lyricist on The Louder We Get, which was formerly called Prom Queen. And he worked off of that to really try to make Karen's piece sing in English and retain the poetry and the intentions and the jokes. And it really, it was not an easy feat. And in Israel, in the Israeli version, there were so many inside jokes if you live there. So we had to figure out, how can we make the same thing work here? What's an inside joke for North America? And while the show was set in Tel Aviv in Israel, we set ours in LA. So it's really an LA story.
Right. So you have to make those tiny adjustments to make it make sense to a North American audience, even though the typical Siegel Center audience member is going to relate to Israel and probably maybe even get some in jokes. But if you're really going to make it be a success for a general North American audience, you really got to kind of not just translate words, but the expressions and the in jokes.
Yeah. You know, there's nothing Israeli. Yeah. There's nothing Israeli or Jewish about the show. Like, I think if people are thinking they're going to come to hear traditional Israeli music, or, you know, the thing that's very Israeli of it is the innovation. And the thing that's very Israeli of it is the no holding back. And of course, if you know Karen Pellis's style, you'll recognize that as a music artist. But otherwise, it's a universal story.
That is the voice of Artistic and Executive Director Lisa Rubin at the Siegel Center. And she is the Assistant Director on this production of April Fools, an adult rock cabaret, getting ready to open up at the Siegel technically next month, May, in just a few days from now. Tell me about what you just mentioned, the innovation from the piece. What about it is innovative?
Where do I begin? The traditional musical has usually a live band. We have a live band who are the actors playing instruments live on stage. And we have the digital band, which means there is phenomenal music producing also that we get to share with the audience. And a quick little fun side note, if you're a fan of the show Tehran on Apple Plus, TV Plus, Adi Rotem, he is the, you know, producer of all of the digital music, and he's the composer of that show. I don't know if you kind of like that trivia. So there's the music innovation. We have 8 85-inch televisions on stage, an incredible video design. We basically shot a movie to go with the show. We did 3 days of shooting a month ago. So we have that. We also have the coolest thing, and, you know, fingers crossed it's going to work, trick up our sleeves, in that the audience keeps their phone on during the show, must download an app called April Fools, which is available on the App Store, Android and iPhone. And we get an inside glimpse into the story through our iPhone. So all throughout the show, we're going to have lots of fun using our cell phones on top of watching, on top of taking in. All of our senses are going to be heightened.
If you don't have an iPhone or a smartphone, period, will we be able to, is it okay to like sidle up to somebody and check in on their phone, or will there be a solution for that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question you're asking. Is like, if I'm like, I guess it's valid that some people may not have a phone, but yes, we recognize that that could happen, and we will have extra phones on hand. And we also, we also have the information up on the screen in case somebody really can follow the phone. So it's all covered.
I'm really intrigued by this because I have separation anxiety when I turn my phone off for a play. Like, I feel weird putting it away, but I know that I have to be in the moment and be in the show. So I'm intrigued by this idea of being able to follow along. I don't know what that says about me, but I like that there is this is open.
Yeah, but it's going to be open on the app. You know, so you definitely don't want to leave your app and go on to other apps or reply to a text message, because the whole show is one big roller coaster ride. And you just want to, once you're in, you're fastened in, you're in it. And you just want to sit in it and you don't stop till it's over.
Well, let's get into the show, because you've already told superstar what her life is. So tell me about this crazy romance that she gets into.
Yeah, I think Karen describes it as a true fake story, I guess.
Lisa, so she's happily married, but she's attracted to another man.
She questions, why do we suppress giving in to our fantasies? She doesn't say, do it, give in, you should, because what this teaches us in this particular story is there are, of course, very real consequences, both to the person who makes that decision and to the person it affects in the world around her. So, but she questions, you know, can we find room or make room, or why do we not allow ourselves to talk about the fantasies that are buried, the secrets that are buried within us? And I think that's a very rare thing that we to present on stage. We don't talk about that a lot. You know, this isn't a Me Too story. This is a woman who very much wants to consent to her own fantasy. And that is, there's a song called Taboo. And that is taboo because she's not supposed to. That's what it's about.
But it also kind of shatters this idea that, yeah, we think once I will be like this and have this house or this partner and these max amount of kids or this pet, everything will be fine. But sure enough, like, once you have something, your desires aren't just satisfied. They keep growing.
Yes.
They keep building.
It is human nature.
Lisa, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about April Fool's Break a Leg this week. And I hope you have fun.
Thank you. Can't wait for you to see it.
That was Lisa Rubin, Executive and Artistic Director at the Siegel Center. She is Assistant Director on this production, April Fools. The musical starts previews this Sunday and officially opens this coming week. For tickets and more information, visit siegelcenter.org. I'll be hosting the Sunday at the Siegel panel this coming Sunday with the team behind the show to find out how it got developed between the team in Israel and the one here in Montreal over the course of the pandemic. You can tune in this Sunday, May 1st at 11 a.m. at the Siegel's Facebook or YouTube pages. You can join us live, but you can also check it out later on. It will be posted. I am Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come on tonight's show, a dancer who spent years performing in long-term care homes has developed a show that reflects her experience and thoughts on aging care and resilience. In their children's book, From the Stars in the Sky to the Fish in the Sea, BC author Kai Cheng Tom creates a child who wants to fit in at school, but faces pushback because they tread somewhere outside the accepted gender binary. Kai Cheng is a trans poet themselves, and their hope is to provide support and words for kids just like them. Mike Payette commissioned an adaptation of this book before he left his post as artistic director at Geordi Theatre. And now the play is finally getting presented to school groups and finally hitting the main stage this weekend after a long break from live theatre for the company. Montreal artist Gabe Maharjan, who is gender non-conforming themselves, they have adapted the show, and Mike is still directing. But I caught up with the new artistic director at Jordy, Jimmy Blay, who says this story in particular is close to his heart and that it's a very important message to share with kids. I spoke with Jimmy earlier today. Welcome back to Upstage, Jimmy. So nice to have you here.
It's really nice to be here again.
How do you feel getting ready to put on a real show with real people on stage and in the audience?
Oh, it's so exciting. I'm really, really happy to be able to do this. I'm really happy to have people come back to the theater. It's been over 2 years since we've had a main stage show that we were able to share with a live audience. One that's only our production. We did do a co-production in the fall of last year, but this is the first like solely Jordy show that we're able to do on a main stage.
And it's one that you guys have been working on for a while now, because it's an adaptation from an actual book.
Yeah, it's an adaptation from a book. The project started over 2 years ago under the helm of former artistic director Mike Payette. He commissioned Gabe Maharjan to adapt the book into a play. The book is an extremely popular children's book of the same title, From the Stars in the Sky to the Fish in the Sea, by a Chinese-Canadian author, Kai Cheng Tom, who is a trans writer, and specifically with this book, decided to explore the themes of gender identity and acceptance.
I think adults might think that that kind of topic is weighty and big, and you know, people don't want to say the wrong thing or get something wrong. It's sensitive. But here, Kai Cheng is able to take that and kind of distill it into the purest format for a child to understand and relate to, right? Because the audience is either going to learn something or, you know, kind of be affirmed by reading the book. Can you tell me about maybe just the way they have made this so accessible for young kids?
Yeah, so the story is, you're right, it's simplified, and I think it works because of that. You know, the story is about our main character, Wilan, who at home is very comfortable in being themselves, who transforms magically into different creatures, depending on what they need during the day. So if they feel like they need a tail, or they need wings, or they need fins to swim, that all happens at home without issue and pretty regularly. It's a magical state to be in. And then the major conflict happens when Wilan has to go to school and faces people that are less welcoming and children who are less used to witnessing that type of freedom and claiming their identity. And so the story goes back and forth between the struggles of trying to fight conformity and what type of support that our main character gets from their mother at home.
And the person that you hired to adapt Kai Cheng's original story, From the Stars in the Sky and the Fish in the Sea, is potentially the perfect person to adapt this into a play format, because that's Gabe Maharjan, who is someone who identifies as being in the margins and has been affirming their identity in the past few years.
Yeah, I haven't had the chance to work with Gabe as much as Mike did previously, but I think that's right. I think Mike knew exactly who they wanted to approach in terms of adaptation and in terms of sharing this story. So Gabe has done a really great job in terms of taking what they know and adapting it onto the stage as a kind of an extension of their story. Interestingly enough, Gabe is also in the show, which is fun as well. So there's two hats that Gabe wears for this. Honestly, our entire team is kind of made up of people who really understand what it means to claim their identity. Everybody from actors to crew members and creative designers, we have a wide range of folks who identify on all different spots on the non-binary and binary spectrum. So it's, the team itself is really supportive. The story is created by somebody who knows. And so I feel like just in general that the process has been supported by informed voices who can connect to the heart of the story.
That is the voice of Jimmy Blay, who is artistic director at Geordie Theater, heading back to the theater this weekend with From the Stars in the Sky to the Fish in the Sea. So Gabe has had a hand in adapting Kai Cheng's actual piece. They are on stage as well. And tell me about the rest of the cast. We have Justin Eddy and Julie Tamiko Manning.
Yeah, so Justin Eddy is playing the role of Wilan, and Julie Tamiko Manning is playing a couple of roles, primarily the mother and also a teacher in the play, and they make a fantastic duo together. I really buy into the relationship they have. There's a beautiful love that pops from the stage from them too. And they're supported by a really fantastic cast. So Gabe and Julie make up kind of the major relationship in the play between mother and Muilang. And then we have Shadia, Kit, Gabe, and Arun, who double as both creatures and students that interact with Muilang on a regular basis. And then we have Wazendeo Kirby and Richard Jutra, who are playing the moon and the sun respectively. And they do a really fantastic job of kind of supporting the story as it moves forward.
That's a massive cast.
It's a huge cast. It's a cast of eight. And then we have a really brilliant and incredible set and costumes that are done by Sabrina Miller. And a lot of the inspiration was kind of taken from the book. And if anybody's ever had the chance to read the book, one of the things that's really prominent are the illustrations and the colors used. It's quite beautiful and magical imagery that's created there. And so she's done a really great job of taking that and transforming that onto stage via set and via costumes. So stunning visually, supported really well by the cast and creatives. We have lighting done by Tim Rodriguez, who's a seasoned lighting designer here in the city, sound design by Evan Stepanian, and our very own Violet Kay, who's a part of the Geordie staff here, has composed the music, which is really lovely to be able to promote and say it's quite lovely music.
You sound really confident about your backstage crew. It sounds like this is a really beautiful project to bring together.
Yeah, I mean, we have a really, really great team. And I think one of the things that I've realized pretty early on in my career is that one important thing is to support yourself with people that are not just confident and competent, but talented. And so and we have that in spades.
Lucky you. Especially since this is the first main stage production under your tenure as artistic director at Geordie. So it's nice to see you being so jazzed and excited about the crew that you've got. I was wondering about going back to the story for Mulan, the main character played by Justin Eddy. That's a bit of a tricky one for me, I think. So at home, this is a child who is confident in who they are. They're somewhere kind of not as we think of, you know, between boy and girl. That's kind of like the very dumb way, I think, to put it in words wise. But going to school and then kind of, I guess, being trying to, this child is being tried to put into a mold. Which one are you? So how does Mulan, you know, get resources and help and develop and feel more confident over the course of the show?
Well, I think that that's a really great question. And I think that comes in consistently with the support from home and really it comes down to the love of a mother. The mother is kind of the beacon that Mulan can constantly go back home to and be reaffirmed that, you know, they should feel comfortable in being who they want to be. We do get pockets of other characters popping in and showing that support as well. The moon, I think, is one that really comes to mind when I think about the question you asked, is that the moon really does actually kind of share the mother's opinion in many ways. And then on the other side of things, we have the son, who's more in line with conformity and rules and regulations. So yes, Mulan struggles with this throughout the play, but it's a theme that we see multiple characters struggle with, including the adults in the play as well.
Interesting to note that yesterday we got the results of the 2021 census in Canada and found that one out of 300 Canadians, or 0.33%, sees themselves as non-binary or trans, or somewhere on the gender spectrum. I mean, relatively speaking, it's still a small part of the population, but what do you think can be gained by talking about these stories, you know, for the other 299 people? Or well, kids, in this case.
Yeah, for me, and you know, I'm coming from a particular perspective. I am somebody who is, you know, I do kind of live on the binary spectrum. But the more that I've had a chance to really have conversation with folk about this subject, the big thing for me is just to be able to listen and to better understand that perspective. And to open our minds to the possibilities of things that live outside of what we've known for so long, which is kind of this duality. And, you know, the way I look at life anyway is that there's very rarely a time or an opportunity, there's very rarely a time where I see things in just black and white. And you know, even more than shades of gray, I think it's just life is filled with colors and we're way more complex than just two things. And so that's the way I look at it. And I think that's the way that we're trying to have people look at it through this story, is that things are just a little bit more complex than the binary or polarity or duality. There's a lot of things that live in between those two poles, let's say, and outside of them as well.
And by packaging the message for kids, you're kind of getting those ideas in at an early age, and it'll hopefully lead, you know, the conversations that the kids will have with their teachers or amongst themselves or with their parents will be, you know, talking more about just kind of accepting a wider range of experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just about being able to spark that conversation, right? I mean, I think that's what we strive to do here. And we do it in many ways. It's not just presenting the show, but it's also providing teachers and schools and parents the opportunity to continue the conversation, whether that's through a talk back or whether it's through our study guides that we share with the teachers before they come to see the show. So hopefully, you know, the conversation continues after the show, as it hopefully did, you know, hopefully started before the show. It's something that should live outside of these 65 minutes.
And I'm certain it will. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. Congratulations overseeing your very first main stage show here at Geordie. It's been so nice to check in with you.
Thanks, Sarah. Talk to you soon.
That was Geordie Theater Artistic Director Jimmy Blay. Geordie's show is From the Stars in the Sky to the Fish in the Sea, and it will be presented this weekend, April 30th and May 1st at Centaur Theater. It's for young audiences. It lasts 65 minutes. You can visit geordietheater.ca or centaurtheater.com for tickets and more information. I'm Sarah Day. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. For 8 years, Ariane Boulay danced in rooms and hallways in over 20 long-term care homes to entertain the residents who were there because they either had lost some of their autonomy or because they were in palliative care. Her new work is Les Jeux de Crépuscule, the French word for twilight. Her choreography brings back together seven artists she worked with in those homes, having them draw on their earlier memories of these performances. She's hoping to stimulate a conversation about aging and resilience. And there is a raft of programming to go with this live show, which will be presented by Densité and Le Radeau this weekend at the Espace Orange Room at Espace Wilder. You might have heard in my last interview, I mentioned the new census results with Jimmy Blay, talking about how one in 300 Canadians consider themselves to be trans or non-binary. Well, the census results, also out yesterday, said that we are aging faster than ever. As a whole population, there's going to be a lot more older residents in Canada as the baby boomers begin to enter their golden years, which makes Ariane's creation and what she's thinking about ever more important. I spoke with Ariane Boulay earlier this month. Welcome, Ariane, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me, for you as a person and as an artist, why are you interested in the process of aging?
I've been discovering the process of aging. I would never known as a young dancer that I would give so much of my life and practice and research around this question. It really appeared to me, and I really started discovering it while I was working in long-term care homes, CHSLD, here in Quebec. And I was interested in working in these spaces at the beginning because I was discovering, I was like dancing salsa and tango on Valentine's Day as a gig, as a young dancer, you know? And I discovered very fast the relationship that dance could create with the patients, the very bodily, sensual connection, deep connection, human connection with the patients through dance and through the presence to the body. And I felt very fast like, oh yes, this is it, you know, this is it for me. And then as I worked in CHSLD, I've been discovering the relationship I could develop with aging and what they would teach me in my own process of aging, which is different than theirs, of course, because I'm 35, but how their aging and when it's the case, their illnesses, autonomy loss, dementia, Alzheimer, than anything, how much we could learn and share within these spaces that are different from the ways of being in relation we're used to.
How did you come to dance in long-term care homes and what did those performances look like?
Mm-hmm. At the beginning, it started in 2013. I was doing my master's at the time in creation and dance. It was a master's, so I had very theoretical interests. But it was the first time of my life I would enter a CHSLD to do this creation in the space, creation, little portraits I was doing around their life histories. I was interested in how the relationship with an artwork can help us reintegrating maybe more deeply our own lived experience. And I started working there and I discovered little by little how powerful and how magical dance was in these spaces when it was spontaneous and when it would be born from what the resident, the patient, proposes without necessarily knowing that he's proposing something, but starting from where the resident is in his mood and his energy and his internal state and taking that as the new normal from which all the dance emerges. So it's kind of giving back power to that which is happening in that person and giving it full space for expressing him or herself fully.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just like a performance for entertaining, but it was almost like you were doing a kind of art therapy.
When I was starting, I was actually creating things there and presenting them there. We were young and I was really naive. I didn't know anything about these spaces, these living spaces. But gradually, within 2 or 3 years, I discovered that what was working the most was when nothing was planned. So I think the project in CHSLD is in its actual version since 2016. So we've been running it for 7 years now, 6 years, the way it is now. And now nothing, we don't know anything of what will happen before we enter. So it's not a show anymore. We really go room by room and we experience dancing and music with the residents individually. So it's really dance being the vehicle for encounter.
You said that you learned things that you didn't expect when you went into the homes. Can you elaborate on that?
I think that when we meet different people, different generations, different cultures, we also meet different part of ourselves. Like if every part of this society is in a way also a little part of myself. And when I started dancing in CHSLD, I was realizing how being and meeting and spending time in their relationship to time and space and relation would permit me to be differently than that I am normally with people of my age that are all in this way of being, working and everything, and that they would help me like discover life differently in their ways of being fully themselves, I would say. And also on how illness transforms us. And I'm not romanticizing illness. I know how hard it is, but I am saying the good side because we don't recognize it often. And I really think there's a big potential for learning and transformation in illness. And we've been learning a lot from dementia. Like, and I read a lot since then on illness and getting to know more and more this context. And it's like if the work we do as dancers and musicians and improvisation, that work that is so long, 20, 30 years to really get rid of this thinking volunteer mind that takes decisions and that thinks he knows what's good and not good, and really letting ourselves being moved by what is there, they are masters in that. So they are actually our improvisation masters. They are fully in their perceptive and sensorial consciousness, and they are incredible in this way of being. So dancing and playing music in this space as improvisers is really like meeting them exactly at the same, in the same scale, you know, in the same space in a way.
That is the voice of Ariane Boulay, who is getting set to present her work, Les Jeux de Crépuscule, and she's also leading a big team on this production, and we'll get to that in a moment. Tell me about how the actual performance that you're working on now began to take shape, because I'm thinking of how you were physically in the homes, and now you're bringing this into an art space.
Absolutely.
And with dancers who were dancing alongside you over the last several years.
Yes, absolutely. All the performers that are on stage are the performers that worked in CHSLD with me since six, seven years. And after a couple of years, after like 4 years, we started feeling that we were learning so much in our own relationships to our own aging, but also to the aging of our family and friends. We felt there was a lot to share because this experience in CHSLD, we live it in a closed, how do you say that? Like nobody can see it. You
know? A closed environment or like in a bubble.
Exactly. Yeah. Nobody is witness of that. And we thought there was a lot to share of how magical and powerful this experience is in the very funny and light, but also in the very fundamental and existential questions that came up. So we thought it would be good to create this show. Now it's a show, but create also this space to share all of this that we've been transformed by. Yeah, that was how it started. But of course, it's a big transformation to start from an experience that is improvised, that is in the rooms, that is individual, that is really about relationship. You know, transposing that to the stage requires a lot of transformation and transfiguration, because of course it cannot be the same experience. You know, it's a whole rereading of this experience.
Speaking with Ariane Boulay, who is the leader, but as a head of this big team putting together Les Jeux de Crépuscule, as well as the artist, the creator herself. And on your team, you have not only, you know, your dancers and the people who worked on the design of the sound, but also a psychologist, which isn't a typical member of a creative team like this. But the show itself has a whole raft of programming to go with it, an opportunity for people to hear stories about aging and long-term care, opportunities for people to share their own experiences. So this is like a real like complimentary suite of activities. Tell me why you decided to do that and also how your psychologist is playing a role.
Uh-huh. When we created the show, I was really feeling that this was the potential for an event on our personal and collective relationship to illness and to aging. And then I thought, wow, it would be very interesting and important that there's not only my voice in this, but that there's other voices as well on this very complex question. But always in an experiential way, because there's a lot of symposiums and spaces for theoretical reflection on these questions, but not for experiential spaces, you know, for people to really feel in their body these experiences or the impact they have in their lives. So we invited Florence Vigny, that is psychologist, and she also holds the space of many ritual spaces. She will be holding two spaces in this event. One are the circles for the caregivers. So everybody that is a caregiver or working in the CHSLD as a nurse, as whatever role, for them really to have the space of sharing and discovering, making sense of their experiences and also creating collective intelligence. And she will also, that is more like private, but she will also be holding the space of the dream lodges that will be a lot bigger and that will take place after each show. So after each show, we will have this 45-minute dream lodge to, again, for all the public, the audience that will want to stay. So with them, create the space to develop visions on how we can collectively dream our relationships to aging. So it's a space to being able to create new visions and new ways to reinvent our conceptions of aging and leave a little bit the common ways of seeing it and maybe create more hope.
It feels like your work is more immediate than ever because we, having seen through the pandemic, the rate of death in the long-term care sector in homes was just awful. And it's led a lot of people to ask, you know, how did we let this happen with all the resources we have? You know, do we really care enough about end-of-life care? And a lot of people will say, well, a lot of, you know, of course there will be death, but these are all old people. There's some really callous things that have been said, you know, out loud over the last 2 years. What do you think about the pandemic and how that's changed our relation to end of life?
I had so much hope during the pandemic when I was reading everything that was coming out. I had so much hope on how consciousness would evolve and change to, change these considerations. I think I am not teaching anybody anything by saying we are living in this hyper-modern society where efficiency is the key to many decisions we take. We tend to value a lot youth in its efficient forms of beings, you know, solving things, working, being active. Efficiency in putting everything as a way to arrive to some end, that end being in general, a product. You know, we don't tend to valorize the relationship as an end itself. I don't know if I'm expressing myself correctly in English. Tell me if I'm not clear.
You're crystal clear.
Thank you. And I personally really think that all generations have a lot to give and to sustain. I think if we listen more to aging in others and in ourselves, we could maybe learn things in ways that we are not even used to consider. I think a human life is not comparable. And I think that recognizing what aging people have to offer is a very radical and political thing. And when I teach my CHSLD project Mouvement de Passage to new dancers, I always say, always be conscious of what you receive because we are so quickly put in the position of the young person that has the power to give and them as people that can only receive. And this is very, very important to me because I think as long as we consider ourselves as young people that have the power to give and them only as people that can receive, we continue to do monoculture, generational monoculture.
Ariane, your thinkings on this topic are so fascinating. And I'm sure so many people are going to enjoy this message and enjoy obviously also the artistic output of what you're putting together. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your time.
That was Ariane Boulay, curator of Les Jeux du Crépuscule. The show begins tonight and continues until May 1st at Edifice Wilder on de Blurry. It's 75 minutes long, but you can also supplement your show with adjacent programming. There's an art installation, talking circles, workshops, dream chambers. You can also book that online. You'll want to visit dansecité.org for tickets and more information. That's dansecité.org for tickets and more information. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard my guests, writer Marc-André Thibault and director Ellen David. They are presenting Mazel Tov with Infinitheater this weekend. Lisa Rubin, artistic director at the Siegel Center, presenting April Fools. I hope you can join Sunday at the Siegel this coming Sunday, May 1st at 11 a.m. We'll be live at the Siegel's YouTube and Facebook pages talking about the development of the show, as well as Jimmy Blay at Geordie Theater, From the Stars to In the Sky to the Fish in the Sea, just for kids, this weekend at Centaur, and choreographer Ariane Boulay on her show Les Jeux de Crépuscule, happening at Espace Wilder this weekend. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under Archives. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
CKUT. On the air, live for CKUT. Oh, what? CKUT.
Good evening and welcome to the April 28th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture by Timothy Snyder, entitled On the Holocaust. It was recorded in New Haven, Connecticut in September of 2015. Timothy Snyder is the Richard C. Lewin Professor of History at Yale and is a permanent fellow at the Institute for Human Sciences in Vienna, Austria. He is the author of Black Earth, The Holocaust as History and Warning, and Our Malady and On Tyranny. So without any further ado, here's tonight's lecture on the Holocaust, by Timothy Snyder.
Very often what happens in discussions of the Holocaust is a shortcut is taken. One says, well, it was all about anti-Semitism, and one refers to Hitler. Fine. But that actually isn't the answer. That's the question. The answer to the question of how the Holocaust happened